Hey, this is JD. Ryan and I had a chance to sit down with Eric Lowe, Susan Rude, and Andrew Adams and talk about some competitions that they're involved in and are pretty much underway. But you still have time to submit a project and get in on the fun. So take a listen, package up a project, and get it in for judging.
We are joined by Eric Lowe of Meridian Hive to talk about the Texas Mead Cup. Welcome, Eric.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. Now, you and I met in Minneapolis, albeit pretty briefly, but you are a mead maker, a professional mead maker, but you were also part of a homebrew club.
That's right. I'm part of the Austin Zealots, proud longtime homebrewer. And I've been going to NHC every year, now HomebrewCon, but we still call it NHC, since 2010, and Minneapolis is where it all started.
That's great. That's great. That's you've got that connection between still with the pro and the home mead maker, and that's what we want to talk about. We want to talk about the amateur side or the home mead making side of the Texas Mead Cup. Why don't you just kind of start off by telling us what the Mead Cup is and how it came to be?
Yeah, you bet. So the Mead Cup is the competition. This is the fourth year now that this has been going on. Started out as a little competition that was an aside for the Texas Mead Fest, which is a festival that we have here in Texas every year in September. And the first year, we got about 25 entries, and I didn't run it that year. Mike Simmons, who is my mead maker at Meridian Hive, and co-founder with me of Meridian Hive, he ran the competition that year, and it was so popular, and so many people showed up, we decided that this was a thing that we should continue. So now we're in the fourth year. We rebranded as the Texas Mead Cup after a couple of years as the Texas Mead Fest competition, which was kind of a bit of a mouthful. So we thought Mead Cup sounded a little bit better. And this last year, we got all the way up to 190 entries. And we had 61 entrants, 18 states, as well as Poland, and the best of show winner was actually from Poland. So it's now the Texas Mead Cup International Competition. Really from, call it.
You say you had an entrant from Poland?
That's right. And this year we're expecting more international entries. So this year, I'm pretty sure we're going to break 200 entries this year. I don't know who's keeping score, but this has to be one of the largest mead competitions on the planet at this point, aside from, you know, certainly we're never going to get to the size of the Mazer Cup that I go to judge every year, but it's definitely getting big, and every year it's been a lot of fun to see the creativity of the entries that we get, and I can tell you, in the time that I've been involved, the quality of the entries has increased every year. And obviously people are taking the feedback and they're entering better meads every year. So it's just amazing to judge these meads now.
What do you think, Eric, when it comes to home mead makers, you know, what's the benefit of entering competitions like this to the home mead maker?
Well, there are two things that I tell the folks who are signing up to judge that they should focus on. And number one is they should be honest and truthful in evaluating the mead and give honest feedback to the mead maker. That's not, you know, not to sugarcoat things, but to try to just say, this is what I taste. This is what I perceive. This is what I get in the mead, and this is how it fits the BJCP style guidelines. The other thing that I ask them to do is to try to provide some feedback to the entrants on what would make the mead better. I feel like as a beer judge, I always try to focus more on that than I do on anything else, because I think a lot of folks who enter competitions, that's especially the beginning mean makers, they're looking for that feedback. So it's important to take the time on that score sheet and provide the feedback on how to improve the mead. That's certainly how I got to the point where I am. I mean, if it wasn't for the mentorship and the feedback that I've gotten from other homebrewers, I don't know if we ever would have made it to the point of opening a commercial meadery.
I've never entered a competition, mainly because I don't trust my own meads. I don't trust my own, products or projects. And the only thing I've got to go by are my relatives. Of course, the first thing out of their mouth is how much alcohol is in it. So, I guess it's time, Ryan, start entering these competitions, because I can see where Eric's going with this. I mean, to be able to have some feedback from judges, about what you're doing, kind of helps you along in developing, good recipes and good meat.
To quote St. Thomas Aquinas, he said, start in the small streams before you go into the oceans. I don't know if that's relevant or not. I just wanted to sound smart and quote one of the greatest thinkers of all time. But maybe before, if you're nervous about the Mazer Cup or the Texas Mead Cup or something like that, JD, there's the LA County Fair. There's a lot of BJCP sanctioned homebrew contests in LA or near you, and that have mead categories. And coming from somebody who has tasted quite a few of your meads, you've made some very good stuff that like you said, if nothing else, maybe you're if you don't care about the medals, maybe just get some constructive feedback on how to even take them up a notch.
Absolutely. Eric, when is this Texas Mead Cup now? What's the dates on this one?
So right now registration is open until the end of the month, and then we're going to be picking up the entries from the drop-off locations on September 1st. So that we can do the sorting and the judging can begin in early September. Any entries that are shipped, I'll need to have those no later than the 2nd, for sure. I think we said on the website the 1st. So I strongly suggest if you're going to ship the entries, get them in early, because you never know. Sometimes the entries can be delayed due to weather, and we don't want to get through sorting and assign all the flights and have judges there and then have entries show up. That happened last year, and that was very unfortunate for that entrant, because we had already judged that flight.
Great information on when to enter. Where can people go to get more information?
Yep, so texasmeadcup.com is the website, and that's the same website for both the amateur and the pro division. So just select the link for the division that you want to enter, which would be the amateur, and that'll take you right there.
Any basic guidelines that we need to know before we send an entry in?
The mead competition is BJCP sanctioned, as you mentioned. We were an early adopter of the new 2015 style guidelines, even before they were set in stone. And I found that those style guidelines worked much better for me than the 2008 style guidelines, which ended up creating very lumpy distribution of entries across categories. So make sure that if it's your first time entering, take the time to read the style guidelines and make sure that your mead fits into the category that you're entering into. I think the number one mistake that people make as a newbie, the first time they enter, is they enter their mead into an inappropriate category. So for example, they'll enter in the traditional category, they'll have a mead that has just maybe a heavy amount of oak or even has some spices in it, or they'll enter in metheglin because it has fruit, but then has spices in it. And that's still not that's not quite the right category. That would be a category that would be fruit and spice, not just spice. So make sure that you understand what category, and certainly the link is there, you know, to contact me as a competition organizer. So if you're not sure, just ask. I get probably a dozen inquiries, and I'm happy to help you make sure that your mead goes in the right category. It'd be a shame to find out after you get your sheets back that you didn't do it right.
Yeah. And finally, Eric, you know, the show, The Mead House, it's all about helping the home mead maker. The five of us on the show have varying degrees of experience, which I think really adds to our show. And you started out as a home mead maker, obviously, and then you turned pro. And we always like to ask, those home mead makers that did go pro, what are some tips or guidelines or from your experience as a home mead maker, is there anything that you can tell our listeners that might help them along?
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously, this is a question that we get quite often. And there are three factors that you really have to take into account if you want to make great mead. And first and foremost, as Ken Tram would say, you have to have quality ingredients. He's probably the luckiest of the mead makers in the pro world among us, because he is blessed with Michigan fruit and Michigan honey, which are just absolutely stellar for making mead. And he's quite honest in saying, you know, that is probably the most important factor in what makes his mead so great. And if you've gotten a chance to taste some of his meads, which are made with the fruit that he grows, you'll understand that that's not the kind of fruit that I can get here in Texas. So I'm never going to be able to make a melomel that's the quality that he's able to make, just because I don't have the access to the ingredients that he does. The right. Second thing to keep in mind is just fermentation control and keeping the yeast happy. So you have to have adequate nutrients, and you have to have temperature control. In homebrewing of any sort, temperature control is important. And obviously, I live in Texas, which is a very hot climate most of the year. It's over 90 degrees 8 months out of the year here.
I'm in Southern California, Eric, so I got you there.
Yeah. So I started with a fermentation refrigerator with the temperature control very early in my homebrewing career, and that was definitely the best decision I ever made toward making good beer and mead. And then the third thing is to make sure that in the process that you degas the mead as it's fermenting, because that is the primary contributor to having a mead which is not properly attenuated. Or we've seen with the lower gravity means that it seems to be even more critical, because the fermentation and the growth phase goes so quickly that if you don't degas your mead, and then it causes all sorts of fermentation issues. So I degas on a commercial scale, we degas every day for the first 5 days, and then we degas every other day after that. And you can do that by just using a drill with a paint stir attachment, which is why I did that for many years. Or you can just use what you have. So if you have a spoon or a paddle or something to agitate gently until you make sure that you drive off as much of the CO2 as you can, that's extremely beneficial to your fermentation.
Thank you for that, Eric. A lot of what you've done is reinforce some of the things that we preach on this show, which makes us feel really good that someone of your quality is not contradicting us.
Great.
So that's great. I wanted to ask you a question about the competition. If I can get one more of those
sure.
in. And have over the last 4 years, or as long as you've been involved, have you seen certain categories grow really fast, you know, like getting a lot of entries in certain categories? And then on the flip side of that coin, have you seen any other categories that just kind of are kind of ho-hum, you know, in the amount of entries you're getting in that style?
Yeah, that's a great question. So my recommendation for those entrants who are thinking about entering for the first time is, if you're trying to win a medal, stay away from Melomels, because everybody makes a Melomel and enters it. On the flip side, the least entered category for us has always been Braggot. We don't get very many Braggot, and it's a shame because I really enjoy judging that category. It's always one of those categories where there's so much diversity, you never know what you're going to get. So enter more Braggots, please, please. And then sort of the third answer to your question is the up-and-coming category, and that's definitely Boucher, which is now, you know, it's in the under the historical mead is where you should enter it in the new guidelines. I've seen year over year, we had maybe one Boucher the first year that I ran the competition, and last year I think we had 6 or 7. It was pretty amazing to see the interest in that. And Matt Whitey gave a talk at HomebrewCon about Boucher, and that was the largest audience of any of the mead talks that I attended. Everybody is interested in Boucher right now.
I wish you hadn't have said anything about Braggot, because I can see the wheels turning in Ryan's brain. I'm going to get a text every day now. JD, send your Braggot in to the Texas Mead Cup. That's, after working with different kinds of meads, I finally settled on the fact that I just love Braggot. That's what I like the most. And that's what I try to do here at home, is just nothing but Braggot. And once in a while I'll throw an experiment together, but Braggot, I love. So, okay, Ryan, I got you. I'll send one in.
I didn't even have to say it.
Yeah, I know. I'm just trying to stop the flood of texts and emails that I'm going to get over the next couple of weeks. So expect one from me, Eric, and I've got a Braggot that I did some time ago. Ryan, it's going to be BB1. You know exactly which one that one is. It's got some real serious aging on it now in a bottle. And it's just, it's coming. It's smooth as glass. It's getting better and better and better. So maybe I'll just send a bottle down, or a couple bottles, I guess. I think I saw it was 2 12-ounce bottles. Is that right?
That's right. That's correct. Yeah.
I'll send a couple of bottles down, Ryan, and we'll just see how this goes. And, maybe we can have Eric back on the show regardless of where it places, maybe we can come back and do a review of the results on the show, just to see how we did.
Sounds great.
That sounds great. All right. Well, thank you, Eric, for joining us. Texas Mead Cup, texasmeadcup.com, and you've got until September 2nd to get Eric your entries.
You bet.
Thanks for having me on.
Thank you, Eric.
Ooh, that's my Halloween scary voice. That's my ghost sound. We are here with our good friend Susan Rood and our new friend Tom Rowan, talking about the Hoppy Halloween Homebrew Contest that's coming up here. Thanks for joining, Susan and Tom.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, likewise.
Thank you.
Well, we are just highlighting a few of the more interesting contests coming up here in the fall, and Hoppy Halloween is definitely one that is interesting. Why don't you just start out by telling us a little bit about the event, how long it's been going on, and where people can get a little more information.
Oh, okay. We've been doing Happy Halloween. This will be our 20th year. We started out, we probably had 150 entries our first year. We're now generally right around 600 entries every year. We went from kind of crappy little medals, which we had a first, second, third place medal in each one, to the world's coolest.
Did you just say 600 entries?
Yes. We have about 600 entries every year the last three, 4 years.
600.
Wow. Yeah. We have the world's coolest medals. They are all hand art, crafted ceramic. This year, they will be all in the shape of the Scream facial little, what would you call it?
Right off of the art.
Off of the art of Scream. They're hand done, they're ceramic, they're oven baked. We have our little round metal at the end of them, but they're a lanyard with probably four or five little between the Scream. There will be Screams on every one of them. Some of them will have a little Halloween, a ghost type or.
Skulls are our traditional.
Skulls. And then occasionally the mead, there'll be a hoppy. We always have a hoppy themed beer, so there'll be hop cones on one of them, things like that. But they're all hand art, so those are really cool to win.
Yeah, we have one person in our club who came to us one year and pitched a new idea for medals to make them kind of cooler instead of the red, white, and blue ribbon that they hang from. And he pitched making by hand a ceramic skull.
Oh, wow.
Now he makes 600 some skulls every year by hand.
Yeah.
Wow. His wife makes fun of him for this.
But they are
cool. Check out the website. You'll see them.
And that, yes, before you forget, now is that, why don't you give us the website?
HappyHalloween.com.
HappyHalloween.com. If I looked at that right, I think registration opens that September 1st.
I think it's the 22nd this year. I think some of the last year's registration is still up. 22nd of September through the 14th of October is when we're accepting medals.
Entries,
sorry. And then the competition is that weekend, right?
Two weekends after,
so right before Halloween.
Sure. Now, I saw that there's two special, first of all, let's go back. You're a beer and mead and cider also? Is that it?
Yeah, beer, mead, and cider. Anything that's accepted in the BJCP style guidelines, we accept.
And then you've got, so it's a BJCP style guideline contest. And then you've also got two special awards I saw, one for fresh hopped beer and then one for a Halloween themed mead. Tell
beer.
Us a little bit about that.
Beer or mead. It can
beer
be either.
Or mead, okay. And now, when someone enters a regular category, let's just pretend they've created a Halloween-themed mead that's a metheglin. Do they need to signify somehow that they also want, this is a Halloween-themed one to consider?
Yeah. Okay. Yes. What they would do is enter as two separate entries. If they have an entry, say that something they feel fits as a Halloween theme also, but they want it entered as a metheglin, enter it as a metheglin as you would under the BJCP category, and then you can also enter it separately under the Halloween theme category.
The Halloween theme category is a completely separate category. It's not just a pull off of the other one.
Right.
Because it is... There's extra points given for Halloweeniness.
Mm-hmm.
I see.
Yeah. and it is, and then that category is actually judged live. So we will have three judges that will taste those beers live and talk about how they fit, how they were entered as a category, but then how do they fit the Halloweeniness of it? You know, are they scary? Are they, you know, so a lot of people will decorate the bottles. Some people will come up with a story to go behind the bottles. Some of them say it's a cherry chipotle mead. How does the burning fire burn, you know, something like that. So they come up with something of how it fits Halloween. We get a few, like, pumpkin beers, things like that, too.
Uh-oh. JD, but, she said she gets pumpkin beer.
You know, and I'm sitting here waiting on, I just ordered some ingredients for a pumpkin project.
I'm expecting an entry from you for Hoppy Halloween.
There's no way I'm going to have Susan. Otherwise, I'm sitting here. I'm mad now.
No, you have plenty of time to get that finished by mid-September to get here.
Well, we'll give it the old college try. But I'm waiting on two more ingredients that are supposed to be here on Friday that should have been here yesterday.
Plenty of time because what is it? Mid-August? That's over a month.
Yeah. Well.
The green bill on this thing is about six pages long.
Still, you can only ferment so long.
I know. I'll do everything I can.
Get it all in.
Oh my God!
It's a challenge now. It's a challenge.
Tell me. Here it is. We're gonna. This is gonna go out on the show. Susan Rood challenges J.D. Webb on the Mead House to deliver.
It is.
Okay.
You get it in. You get your entry in and actually place. I will send you an extra bottle of my mead.
There you go. Oh my God. I'll never live this down. So challenge accepted. I'm going to do everything I can do to get one to you. Oh my God. God, that means I got to go to work. you say this, this Hoppy Halloween thing has been going on for 20 years. How did it start, Susan? Yep.
Actually, we started as the Great Northern Challenge. The local homebrew, local brew pub had a competition, and our homebrew club helped sponsor it. And that business went out of business. Our club kind of lost a little bit of money because we had bought all the medals and the business filed bankruptcy. We got stuck for the medals, and we decided, you know what? We want a competition. We're going to just sponsor it ourselves because we have full control of it then. Nobody's going out of business. It's our club. And we've ran that, and we decided to call it the Hoppy Halloween Challenge, do it at Halloween time, and we've ran it ever since. And probably the best thing that ever happened for our club was that business. Not that I wanted that business to go out of, because that was like my favorite brew pub ever, but just our learning lessons in that made us know how to run a competition, made us understand all of the business behind a competition. And we've just went with it. And it's been a wonderful experience. I can't say we've had a bad experience since. Just because we push to be one of the best competitions in the country.
Yeah. Before I roll the mic down over towards Ryan's end of the table down there, Tom, for somebody like me who's never entered a competition before, are there any particular guidelines, things that I should be looking for, things that I need to be aware of before I submit my entry?
Really, it's look through the BJC's style guidelines. Make sure that your beer or mead fits the style guidelines. Secondarily, if you're entering specialties, meads, especially with fruit, methaglins, or specialties, you know, make sure that you describe them properly. Be short, succinct, but very descriptive in what you want. That's the key. You know, if you're going to enter the competition, make sure that your product meets what you're going to be judged to. That's the biggest thing that I can give you. Now, if you're going to enter specialties and stuff like the two categories you mentioned earlier, like the fresh hop or the Halloween theme, do a little research on that. And if you're coming into the Halloween theme, that is one of the greatest, funnest categories that we have. Don't enter. The only thing I can give you for a first-time entry, if you want to get into that, I really don't want you to be disappointed by coming and entering like your pumpkin beer and having a plain bottle and just saying it's a pumpkin beer. There are 50 points that are judged to the beer, so you have to, or mead, and keep in mind, meads have won this comp, that category many, many years. It has to be good. That has to be spot on. You know, that has to be highly, highly good. But if you don't have that extra 25 points for the Halloween-iness, you know, dress up your bottle, you know, do a little research on the web. You've got plenty of pictures and stuff. There's people dress up their bottles. They throw stories in there. It's meant to be fun. I mean, That's just one aspect of it. So a lot of with Hoppy Halloween is, and one of the reasons why we grow and continue to be, we embrace the Halloween. Think of this. We embrace the Halloween theme and we have fun with it. And to Susan's point, we try to put on a great competition. So, if you have questions, hit up our organizers, hit our website, hit any of the emails there, and you'll find us very responsive and very.
Well, I got Susan's phone number too.
Oh yeah.
and I would say if you can make it up for our competition, our speaker hasn't been decided 100% yet, but we always have a great speaker. We always have a lot of fun at the event. There's quite a few homebrews on tap. A lot of times we'll have a commercial beer or mead on tap also. It's just fun event. We not only around the competition, but seriously, Thursday, Friday night, we sit there till 3-4 in the morning drinking beer. Saturday night, we're drinking beer late till night, or sharing beers, meads. Anybody that shows up and it comes to it, we treat them like they are the best family member we've ever seen. So you will have a great time if you show up to our competition.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And before I throw it over to Ryan, I don't know that they even have a category for extremely experimental, but I'll throw the mic over to you.
I think experimental just covers it all. You can write extreme in the description.
Yeah. Everything I do is experimental. So what the heck, you know?
So you said about 600 entries. What is the typical rough breakdown of how many are beers, ciders, and meads?
I would say we have about 60 meads and ciders to, so 10% meads and ciders to beers, okay. We do have a good turnout for meads and ciders. We get a lot of, for instance, Scott Char's mead that I'm making at Prairie Rose Meadery. That was, I tasted that at Hoppy Halloween when I was judging that. And it's like, Scott, can I make this mead? Because it was phenomenal. And I've made it. Moonlight Meadery's made it. It's my pineapple chipotle or Moonlight, what do they call it? I don't remember. Something comfort, discomfort. I can't remember how Moonlight calls it.
I I didn't realize that was the mead that I didn't realize that that's the mead that, that you were making of his. I got a FedEx a box delivered today from Scott that has that mead in it for me to taste.
Yep. And that is the mead that I have as my pineapple chipotle. Moonlight Meadery makes as something comfort or some discomfort. I can't remember it right off. But it's what Scott calls it, and Moonlight calls it the same thing. But it's a roasted pineapple chipotle mead. So when meads come through there, I taste them. It's like, oh, I have to make that. I have another that I've tasted. I'm hoping to make. I'm in talking with the guy, so I'm not going to talk about what it is. But that's kind of the cool end of some of those. So, you know, we do get some really good meads. We get a lot of entries from the Minneapolis homebrew clubs that enter down here that make really good meads. So I would say our mead end of it is actually pretty competitive.
So staying with that, what categories of mead have you seen in the last several years here or a few years grow in popularity or become very, very much more entries that you're seeing? And then on the flip side of that coin, are there any categories of within mead that are more stagnant or maybe even in decline in the number of entries that you see?
I think every year I wouldn't say that there's a category that grows or declines in mead, as there's every year there's some kind of a more interesting. It's like, oh wow, somebody comes up with this. Because, you know, Scott's pineapple chipotle, that was really cool. We've had some of the the traditional with just the chocolate, what is that? Meadow foam. That has been a big one lately that I've seen coming up that makes just phenomenal meads. I've seen some lavender things that are just wonderful as methaglins. There's just, for a while there was a lot of really fruit high, fruit and chipotle meads that, which culminated in that pineapple chipotle. You get a cherry chipotle, blueberry chipotle I've had. These are just phenomenal. But what I just find is every year something else just jumps out. And that doesn't mean that just your, I think just your traditional, I've seen in the last couple of years, just a traditional wildflowers have done well. It really, to me, it's more the balance of everything in your mead versus what your ingredients are, because how do you balance these ingredients with what you've done? That's more important, I think. But I mean, you do see a trend of more fruit meads winning versus more spice meads, but I think they all have to be very well balanced. Do they showcase your honey? Do they showcase your fruit? Is the acid good? Is the honey good? Is the tannins good? Those are the more important things than what we're seeing of the new and exciting things.
Yeah, great.
Very good.
By the way, a good friend of ours just passed through the room and filled my glass with a pineapple chipotle mead by Susan. So, since we were just talking about that. Cheers.
Awesome.
Thank you.
I got to get up to Fargo, up to Fargo, just to visit with Susan. That place sounds like a wild place, man.
Yeah, friends passing through with me. Well, I mean, how can you go wrong?
Well, and you picked the time to call right in the middle of our homebrew club meeting. So.
Hey, well, if everybody's there, hello from the Mead House.
Yeah. Well, they're kind of out in the garage and yard. Yeah,
we had to come inside because otherwise you wouldn't be able to hear us over them.
Very good. Well, tell them the Mead House says hello and to have a good homebrew meeting.
Well, and I'm going to post this on our web page, so hopefully a lot of people will listen.
Very good.
Well, all thank right. you, Susan. Thank you, Tom. HappyHalloween.com. If you can make it to Fargo, or I saw on the website there, you are able to ship as well. Get your ghost stories ready and your fresh hops and a couple of the more unique categories I've seen in any homebrew competition.
Yep. All bring right. it. We really welcome the entries and we welcome the competition. And
when you win, the medals are phenomenal. So
medals are good. Prizes get shipped.
Yeah, we have a first, second, and third place prize for every category, and we ship. If your first place winning is a bag of grain, we ship it. We don't just decide that. Oh, we're going to give the best prizes to the local people and only ship light stuff. We ship whatever. So
good. All right. Well, Susan, it's always a pleasure talking with you and on the show again here on the Mead House. So thanks to Susan and Tom for coming aboard tonight and talking about Hoppy Halloween. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
The 7th annual Orifice Mead Fest is coming up. Joining us to talk about it is Andrew Adams. Andrew, thank you for joining.
My pleasure.
Why don't you start off, just tell us a little bit about about the fest, how long it's been going on. Well, we know it's been going on 7 years, but the 7th annual, but why don't you tell us a little bit about it and how long you've been involved?
Oh, I've been involved with it since the very beginning. The idea actually came about with some friends sitting around a campfire. We needed to do a fundraiser for my choir, Orpheus Pagan Chamber Choir. We were talking about how wine tastings are so popular, and I said, what the hell? We need to do a mead tasting. And we were talking about all the possibilities for that, with homebrewers just coming in and bringing in mead and having a wonderful afternoon, just sitting around talking and drinking mead. And then that just sort of evolved into what's become one of the biggest mead-only competitions and then tastings in the country.
So how many entries do you typically get?
Usually we get over 100.
Oh.
That's quite a few different categories.
That's a lot of mead.
Yeah.
Well, we have two divisions. We do have the home brewer, the home mead maker division, and then also a professional brewer division. And between the two of them, we bring in over 100 entries each year. Each category or each division is open in all the BJCP categories. So if it's mead, we'll take it, we'll taste it, and we'll judge it.
That's great. Were you yourself a mead maker prior to starting the competition?
I am not. You
just like to drink it.
I love to drink it.
A consumer. You've got to be. I think you're the first consumer only person that we've had on the show. So that's a first for us. So hey, you know, I mean, it's not often that you know. And from my personal side, I had no idea what this stuff was until I thought I wanted to start brewing beer. And then I heard about this stuff called mead. And I thought, well, you know, since everybody else is brewing beer, maybe I should do something that they're not. And so I started doing mead. I never had mead before in my life. So was curious about what this stuff was. So interesting that you're not a home brewer, but you're a consumer, which is a good thing. You say you have 100 entries from the pro side and the home side. What are some of the more popular meads that you get from the home brewer side?
Oh, we get everything under the sun.
Like fruit, you know, meads
I'd probably say fruit meads are the most popular.
Have you seen any
into some of the metheglins and things with spices and things like that? Yeah. Pepper meads.
Pepper. Like chili
peppers. Yeah. Those are becoming really popular right now.
Okay.
You might have just answered the question I was about to ask with the pepper meat or the cap smell. But which categories have you seen accelerate in the amount of entries that you've received over the years?
That's a hard one to answer. I really have to think through that. I would probably say. Actually, the one that's really interesting that's beginning to pop up, and it's not a big category by any means, are the historical meads. Particularly going back and researching recipes from Ireland and Scotland. We've seen a real upsurge in those.
Interesting.
And the one hot new category this year seems to be acerglints, maple meads.
Sure.
You know, the Orpheus Mead Fest, just a mead fest, there's a lot more to it. Can you explain to our listeners what else happens during this mead fest? Now, you said that you're the choir director.
Yeah, well, it's basically a mead tasting, and the way it's evolved is that we have the top commercial or professional mead makers in Colorado all coming together to share their mead and their new brands and their new types, and we usually have 40 to 50. I think maybe this year we'll even have more meads for everybody's taste. So it's a big tasting. And we have food and we have music and it's a hell of a lot of fun.
Well, it's certainly, it's one way to get people exposed, you know, to mead, because like I say, I mean, you know, 3 years ago, I had no idea what this stuff was. I ran across it in some literature that I was reading when I was, you know, looking up brewing beer. And so, you know, I mean, where do you get this stuff? I mean, I went to my liquor store, you know, several liquor stores here in town. They had no idea what this stuff was either, you know, so. Yep. You know, hard to come by. And so I started pressing them. And, I mean, every week I would go back and say, hey, when are you going to get some mead in? And I gave them some names and meaderies. And I said, you know, call these guys. And lo and behold, the two that I shop at out here finally got some mead in. And I was able to have some. And after 7 years, is this a growing festivity there in Denver?
Yep. Definitely. 7 years ago, we started in a very large backyard, a very beautiful backyard, but a backyard. And we had maybe four or five of the professional brewers in, and a lot of homebrew. And over the years, we've moved it into central Denver. I think last year we had about 150 to 200 people out, as opposed to the 35 the first year. So yeah. It's definitely growing. The enthusiasm is growing. I'm sure that we'll have over 200 people at the new tasting this year.
Great. JD, maybe you can send Andrew's choir a case of something and have them record a theme for it.
Yeah, sure. There you go. There you go. Yeah, the Mead House theme by the Orpheus Mead Fest Choir. Andrew, sure. When is this competition? How can people get a hold of you or submit their entries? And how and when does judging take place? So if you could tell us something about that.
Okay, we're accepting entries now. Let's see, I don't have my calendar in front of me. Until I think September 2nd or 3rd, which would be the first Saturday in September. So they've got about three and a half weeks to get their entries in. All they have to do is go to our website, which they can, the easiest way is just Google Orpheus PCC, and the website will come right up. There's a website page for the Mead Fest, and then links to the different competitions, either the homemakers or the professional division. And it's pretty intuitive. Lots of people have already entered, so it can't be that difficult to do. We are sorting and getting it all organized so that we can judge it on 2 days, September 8th and 9th, then get all the paperwork together and all the awards decided on, and we will announce all the winners and have the big festivities at the Mead Fest on September 30th.
Great. Here's the last question for me, Andrew. You had said that you had gotten some historical meads in of I think you said some English or Irish or Scottish.
And Polish.
I'm familiar with Polish meads. I am familiar with those. But how would you describe some of these historical British Isle meads that you've received?
Earthy, a really intriguing earthy between the sweetness of the honey and just undercurrents of pine and fir. That's really intriguing and really delicious.
I keep thinking of Scotch, you know, like a peated.
Yeah, yeah.
Dry. No,
they're not smoky at all.
Right.
But they have that undercurrent of peat and very herbaceous. That's the best way I could describe it. But definitely some pine and fir in there as well.
How interesting.
Yeah, they really are.
Ryan, we need to go to Denver and try
where
some
you guys
of that
located?
Out. Andrew, I'm in Southern California. Ryan is way up north. He's up in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And we do a show once a week and called The Mead House. It's a show that we developed just for the home mead maker. You know, we talk about processes, procedures, you know, everything that we can think of to try to help the home mead maker, you know, pursue this hobby. There's five of us that co-host the show. All come from various experiences and knowledge in making mead. And one of the things that we wanted to do this season was highlight some of these, you know, some competitions out there, because we kind of feel that, you know, it would be good for a home mead maker like myself. I plan on entering my first competition this year, maybe two, to get some feedback in return, that kind of let you know how you're doing, what do other people think about it. And you know, like I told Ryan earlier, you know, all of my relatives drink my mead, but the first question out of their mouth is how much alcohol is in it. That seems like that's the only thing they care about, you know. I want to know how it tastes. You know, what do you really think about it? You know, I mean, it's almost like going to a go a wine tasting, you know. I want to know what you really feel about it. So
we're really lucky here in that our head judge and judging manager, if you would, has been creating mead competitions and participating in them for the last 30 years. So he really knows his stuff. And he's also one of the founding directors of the Major Cup. Another of our favorite judges took I don't know how many awards in the New Hampshire competition out of Moonlight Meadery.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Mead Free or Die.
Yeah, Mead Free or Die. Yeah, he just swept everything. And between the two of them and all their colleagues, we have some of the very best mead makers in the country judging our meads. And so that feedback and that evaluation is going to be really, really important and really valuable for people, especially those that are interested in taking it beyond the hobby level and trying to make a living out of it.
Yeah.
Which a lot of guys have been really successful with. I'm thinking of Eric Newquist up in Seattle and Acer Meadery. So, you know, the feedback that you can get from these competitions is really helping people to step forward into, you know, really making mead much, much more prominent, much, much more commercially viable, for lack of a better word, but really making it part of the whole liquor establishment rather than just being this weird offshoot.
Right, right, exactly. And again, this is the 7th annual Orpheus Mead Fest, and let's see, orpheuspcc.org is the website.
Yep.
And our listeners can get all the information there about the Mead Fest. Now, this thing, you got to get your entry in by September 2nd. So short on time here. So we're looking at a couple, two, 3 weeks here that you need to get it in. Judging or at least starts on, September 9th, you say?
September 8th and 9th, yep.
8th and 9th, yeah. And Andrew, terrific. Thank you for joining us this evening.
Well, thank
really
you for having me. It's been a real pleasure.
Well, I'm just an old cowboy from Colorado. I used to live up north of Fort Collins a few years ago. So when I saw Denver, I thought, okay, we need to talk to this guy. He lives in my backyard, so...
Well, I'm not Denver native. I came here after 30 years in New York City.
Yeah.
And I never thought I'd be sitting around a campfire up in the mountains drinking mead, thinking, gee, we ought to have a mead tasting in a competition.
Yeah. And I miss the mountains up there. The Poudre River. I still have property up in the high country above Colorado Springs.
Oh, nice.
Up near the Arkansas River up there in a beautiful little valley, South Park Valley up there. But again, Andrew, thanks for coming on, sharing the Orpheus Mead Fest with us here today. And good luck with the Mead Fest. And
thank you very much.
Have you on after it's over with, and you can tell us more about it after your competition. So again, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Hey, thank you.